News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Northeast Diary, your exclusive window into the vibrant tapestry of culture, heritage and stories that define the enchanting region of Northeast India. Today, from the archives of Akashwani, we present an enlightening interview featuring Mr. Otto Mazur Sikhoze, the esteemed former regional manager of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. During the interview, Mr. Sikhoze provides captivating insights into the significance of the Kohima War Cemetery, shedding light on its profound historical importance and the poignant stories it holds within its sacred grounds. But for now, let's tune for an in-depth analysis on the pressing concerns surrounding autism spectrum disorders in Meghalaya, exploring the need for greater support and specialized education services.
In the state of Meghalaya, concerns are mounting over the lack of special education facilities and the increasing incidence of neurodevelopmental disorders, particularly affecting children in rural areas. This issue took center stage on World Autism Day as a public discussion organized by mental health institution Sankar at Mission Compound in Shillong delved into the challenges faced by specially abled children and their caregivers. The day commenced with a symbolic walk from Khindai Lad, drawing participation from nursing students, educators, caregivers and medical professionals, all advocating for greater awareness and support for individuals with autism. Dr. Dida Khongla, a consulting psychiatrist at Shankar, highlighted the stark statistics, revealing that Meghalaya registers around 0.3 autistic children per 100 of the population, lower than the national average of 0.8 to 1%.
Statistics as of 2021, it has shown that 1 in 6 children have the autism spectrum disorder, and it is more common in boys. However, in the state of Meghalaya, it is a growing concern because the study, the global burden of disease study that was conducted from 1990 to 2017, showed that there were 354 cases per 1 lakh population. So this is a growing concern.
Dr. Khongla expressed concerns about the lack of resources and support available to rural families, emphasizing the need for specialized schools and trained educators. She urged government intervention to address these pressing issues and ensure equitable access to care and education for all children.
I've seen a lot of children come from the far-flung areas. It's very difficult from a child who comes from Maukarwat. Where does he go? He has to come all the way to Shillong to avail the facilities that we provide for special care children. We need to have centers at every district with a special educator. That is my concern for the rural population. Where do they go?
Meanwhile, Priyanka Gogoi, a consulting clinical psychologist at Shankar, shed light on the challenges faced by families seeking assistance, particularly those from remote areas. She stressed the importance of personalized assessment and psychoeducation for caregivers, underlining the pivotal role parents play in the therapeutic process.
First of all, when we have children coming to our place for specially diagnosed with autism, the first thing that we do is have a psychometric, that is an assessment, psychological assessment, whereby we try to assess the severity. Now, all the people with autism will not be demonstrating a similar signs and symptoms. They will also differ in terms of the severity. Someone will lie with mild, moderate, severe, depending upon the criteria that has been set. So after we have assessed the child properly, the next step that is, we psychoeducate the guardians. Now, psychoeducate the guardians, what we mean is by educating the guardians about the signs and symptoms, the prognosis of the condition, and what are the treatment facilities available. So I have seen 5 to 6 cases who are coming from far-flung places. Okay, so for them, it's very difficult to come here again and again for the therapy, given the logistics and the economical conditions that they come with. So the first, or I would say the co-therapist in this entire process, is the parents, because ultimately it's the caregivers who have to go back and teach the children the deficits. Now, most of the time, talking about the signs and symptoms, what we most observe is parents mostly come here when the child becomes very hyperactive. They say, "Ani, ma'am, we cannot make him do anything. He does not sit at one place." Hyperactivity is a part of autism, but it is not the core symptom, so to say. The core symptoms would be mostly a limited social and communication skills. That is, you know, there will be poor eye contacts, less of social smiling, and they will mostly be engaged in solitary play. So, for example, even if they are sitting with the family members, they will mostly be engaging in solitary play. They will not approach you. There will be limited eye contacts. There will be very less limited eye contacts, and some children also have difficulty in speech as well. So for that, the approach is basically a multidisciplinary approach where we also seek the help of the occupational therapist, speech therapist, to deal with any speech deficits that a child may have. And for the behavioral modification or for the behavioral aspects per se, it is me where the role of clinical psychologist mostly comes. So we generally go with the behavioral modification techniques, teaching them the basic skills, social skill training. So these are the various things that we offer here at SunCare.
While the government indeed holds a significant role in addressing the challenges encountered by parents of children with autism, further governmental involvement is imperative, particularly in the establishment of specialized education centers and support services for autism spectrum disorders across all districts to ensure a brighter future for children with autism in Meghalaya. This is KG Chapola with Lamfrank Nonspung for Northeast Diary from Akashwani News, Shillong.
Now let's delve into the historical significance of the Kohima War Cemetery, a poignant reminder of the valor and sacrifice witnessed on the battleground of Garrison Hill. Once the serene abode of the Deputy Commissioner, it was transformed into a battlefield where Commonwealth forces fiercely defended against the Japanese onslaught, securing victory and reopening the vital road to Imphal. In this exclusive interview from our archives, esteemed former regional manager of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, Mr. Ato Mezor Sikhoze, shares insight into the profound importance of the Kohima War Cemetery recorded earlier. Join us as Mr. Sikhoze engages in a thought-provoking conversation with our presenter, Mr. Dominic Thomas.
When the darkwood fell before me, and all the paths were overgrown, when the breeze of pride say there is no other way, I tilled the sorrows of stone. I did not believe because I could not see, though you came to me in the night. When the dawn seemed forever lost, you showed me your love. Cast your eyes on the ocean, where much like night seems endless. Please remember me. Please remember me.
When you go home, tell them of us and say, for their tomorrow, we gave our today.
These most moving lines written about fallen soldiers state very briefly what it is that each soldier gave to his fellow citizens. I stood thinking about the message for a long time at War Cemetery Kohima, Nagaland on Imphal Dimapur Road. It gave me a choked feeling to see the burials and the age written in it. It is well maintained with blooming flowers in abundance. As I was reading the message and age of each fallen soldier, I met the man who maintained the cemetery for the Commonwealth War Graves Commission for more than 20 years. He is...
My name is Ato Mezor Sikhoze. I was the former regional manager of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. I was looking after all the war cemeteries in Northeast India. I was with the Commonwealth War Graves Commission for 21 years. In fact, I was the second generation. My father was there from the inception of the Kohima War Cemetery. He retired after 40 years of service. I also have put in 21 years of service. After my retirement, my son has joined and he's been there the last 10 years.
Could you tell us, how did this responsibility of taking care of the cemetery came to you?
Just after the Second World War, at that time it was called the Imperial Imperial War Graves Commission, now known as the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. They wanted to build the war cemetery in Kohima. They needed somebody who had horticultural knowledge. Incidentally, my father has done his BSc in horticulture from Allahabad University. The deputy commissioner, Kohima district at that time, was Sir Charles Posey. He had called my father to come and join the Imperial War Graves Commission. Before that, my father was already working in the agriculture department, and from there he joined the Imperial War Graves Commission. So that's how my father joined the Imperial War Graves Commission in 1947.
What is the history of the Kohima War Cemetery?
Second World War in this region. This is called Burma Campaign. The invasion of the Japanese into India was halted at Kohima. So Kohima became a very important place for the British. They planned to build a war cemetery in the actual battle site of the Battle of Kohima. There are very few war cemeteries all over the world where the war cemeteries are built in the actual battle site, and Kohima is one of them. They say that some of the soldiers now who are buried here in Kohima War Cemetery, buried where they were killed. That's what they say.
Do we have any remains of the battlefield of the Garrison Hill?
Yes, actually, most of the graves have actual remains. During the thick battle, the different regiments or battalions, for that matter, they have unit cemeteries all over Kohima where they buried their fallen comrades in those small cemeteries. And after the Kohima War Cemetery was planned, the remains of these soldiers were exhumed from the unit cemetery and brought to the Kohima War Cemetery. The different regiments or battalions are buried in the same plot.
Who designed the cemetery and what is the design of it?
As I said, since it was on the actual battle site, they could not just have an architect to design it. And then since the war cemetery is on a slope, bungalow of the deputy commissioner, war cemetery is built over his bungalow. His bungalow was destroyed in the battle. You would see above, high above in the war cemetery is the tennis court. The tennis court of the deputy commissioner have been retained as it was those days. So those before the war, the officers used to come and play tennis in that particular area. So that is still retained as it is. The graves are buried in plot wise on this terrace cemetery. And of course we have the main feature, any war cemetery, is the cross. Cross, you see the big cross over there standing there, we call it the cross of sacrifice. That is, you see a sword also there on the cross. Any war cemetery all over the world which has got more than 200 burials will get a cross. Any war cemetery where they have got more than 1,000 burials, this is the biggest cross. This is called the B1 cross, okay? So, in the smaller cemetery, they get smaller cross, whereas this is the biggest cross because we have so many fallen soldiers who are buried here.
We see here a lot of bronze plaques or epitaphs. How many of them are there in the cemetery?
There are 1,421 graves. These are the graves of Christians, Muslims, Jews, and even Gurkhas. See, some of the Gurkhas, they are tribals. And then we have 917 Hindus and Sikhs who were cremated. So at the topmost part of the Kohima War Cemetery is what we call the cremation memorial. Cremation memorial, there are the names of 917 soldiers belonging to the different regiments and battalions. In fact, you will see even Nepalese Sher regiment.
The soldiers come from different countries across the world. Which are the countries from where soldiers fought battle here in Kohima?
The fighting around here was confined to the 2nd Division of British Army. When I say 2nd Division of the British Army, at that time, India was also under the British Raj. Even the Indian, the regiments, different regiments, come under the 2nd Division of the British Army. As I said, the 1,421 graves Among them, there are British soldiers, there are Indian soldiers, and when I say Indian again, at that time, India was undivided India. We have the 1st Punjab Regiment, the 2nd Punjab Regiment, the 15th Punjab Regiment, which all belong to now presently Pakistan. Majority of the burials are, those are buried here, are British. Then we have some Burmese also who were buried here. Australians are here. Canadians are here, but the Australians and Canadians were in the Air Force.
We find a small sapling near the cross at the tennis court. What does that sapling or that plant signify?
That is called the sniper tree. The actual tree during the war, it's a black cherry tree. During the war, Allied forces were all, you know, surrounded up there in the Garrison Hill. They were surrounded there, and then one Japanese sniper climbed up on this tree. He started shooting at the British soldiers, the Allied soldiers who are up there on the Garrison Hill, and he killed many soldiers. And then finally, one Jawan of the 3rd Assam Rifle, one Uttam Singh, he saw where the firing was coming. From the Garrison Hill, he came down just near below the tennis court, and then he saw that there was somebody up on that cherry tree. And then, so he fired a shot at that person, but the person did not fall down. Uttam Singh fired again, some 2-3 shots again, still then the person did not fall down. So he finally crept close to the tree. He found that the Japanese sniper had, he strapped himself around the tree so that he will not fall down. So he was dead. Uttam Singh had killed him, but he was still strapped up on the tree. Importance of this cherry tree is that the Japanese sniper had used this as a sniper post. The War Graves Commission, they wanted to save this tree. However, black cherry tree, their life is about 50 years. Original black cherry tree died, but we have collected seeds from this old tree, and we had managed to propagate them in the nursery, and we had brought one which is an actual offshoot of the original sniper tree.
When you enter the cemetery or when you look from the road, we find a beautiful moving inscription. How did that come? And what does that mean?
Yes, it is. It is the memorial of the 2nd Division of the British Army. Just behind that stone are 13 panels. 13 panels of the different regiments who were under the 2nd Division of the British Army. And then behind the main monolith, they have written a brief story about the Battle of Kohima. On the monolith, on the 2nd Division, it reads, "When you go home, tell them of us and say, for their tomorrow, we gave our today." These words, very inspiring, very touching word, has been quoted in many occasions these days. The army, they use it. How did this inscription or the words came? I'm told that this goes way back during the Trojan War, the Greek War, where they sacrificed their life. So they say that to tell their family they have given their life for their younger generations, for their tomorrow. That's what we had found out. The inscription came, the wording came from the Greek period.
Is there any anniversary of memorial service at the cemetery?
As an anniversary, we don't have, but we have visit by the veterans, the relative of the veterans, or the widows of the veterans. A visit being sponsored by the Royal British Legion. For the last 2-3 years, they have not been able to send any group to Kohima, because now the veterans are, those who are alive are very old. They cannot move. It is now their children and their grandchildren who are coming to see their parents' grave or their grandparents' grave.
You have been with the Kohima War Cemetery for more than 2 decades. Do you have any memorable anecdotes associated with the cemetery?
I have met so many visitors over the years in the war cemetery, there is one particular, you see, widow. Her name is Mrs. Ellen Haney. She, her husband, Robert Haney, belonged to the Cameroon Highland Regiment. He was killed here in the Battle of Kohima. The widow, they were married for about 6 months before the war. And so they had no children. The wife also, during the war, she was working as a nurse. Immediately after the end of the Second World War, late 1945, the war cemetery was taking shape. She first visited Kohima in 1945. You see, it was very, very difficult for foreigners to get permit to enter Nagaland. She managed to get the RAP, and she visited Kohima 6 times, 6 different occasions. And then I got to know her from the third visit, when Royal British Legion were getting permit from the Indian government to bring groups. So she came. In fact, the second time she came, my father was there, and then from there we became family friends. So one time when she came, she says, "When I die, I will be cremated, and my family will bring my ashes to Kohima, and you must bury my ashes around my husband's grave." I said, "Atio, will you promise me?" He said, "Yes, I will do that." And then she died 4 years ago. And then her nephew, the next year, when the Royal British Legion, the group came, he brought her ashes. And it was a very moving moment, you see. I remember the promise I made to her. So this was a big group of veterans and the children, and some widows. So I told them that this was a promise I made to this great lady, and now it is my honor to bury her ashes around her husband's grave. So it was a very moving, touching scene. I can see many of the European ladies who were there, they were in tears, you see. For me, I think that was the most memorable part of my service with the Commonwealth War Graves Commission.
As we were moving around the cemetery, we did meet some visitors.
My name is Catherine Hooper. I am actually American from California. This cemetery to me is really special. Although I'm not British, you can't help but feel the pain that the families who suffer their losses must feel. You just have to read the inscriptions on every memorial to know what a horrible thing war is. So this memorial is actually very appropriate for all of us in the world to actually feel and see and touch the words of the families towards those that they've lost. So it's beautifully done, beautifully maintained, and I encourage all tourists of all nationalities to spend time and not just take pictures, but walk through the cemetery, read how young these men were and one woman, and see what their families had to say.
My name is Jonathan Hackett. I'm from Canada. It's just a monumental moment for so many people at so many countries. Hundreds of thousands of people were affected by this moment.
Hi, my name is Hope Lockridge from Austin, Texas in the USA, and I'm finding this cemetery absolutely beautiful. It's such an honor to those men who gave their lives fighting for freedom, and the state of Nagaland has certainly put together a beautiful memorial. It's very inspiring to hear, but it's quite an honor to be here.
What does the war cemetery signify for today's generation?
Actually, I was born there in the Kohima War Cemetery, where my father, we have our cemetery bungalow. I was born there, brought up there, and even now my son also, he was born there. Maintenance of the war cemetery, we have a particular standard to keep. We cannot go beyond that. Problem here in Kohima is the shortage of water, where we don't get sufficient water to water the plants. Now, these days, the visitors come to the war cemetery. They don't know the importance of the war cemetery. They think that it is a park and they try to come and have picnic or, you know, run around and play, which I think is not, we are not paying the respect to the soldiers who have sacrificed their lives for our country. So I think we should have some reverence. You know, when you come to the cemetery, we should remember that the soldiers who are buried here have sacrificed their life, given their life for our tomorrow. See, so they have given their today for our tomorrow. So we should revere the place. This is a sacred place. So we should respect the cemetery.
As I moved out of the cemetery, what lingered in my mind, I would like to share with you. Soldiers never die. They just fade away. A brave one is sleeping, gone, but not forgotten. Is all that I could say as I left the eternal resting place of fallen brave hearts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's remembering. Please remember me. Please remember.
Tune in now to experience the powerful track titled Kohima by Sahil Bhargav, set against the backdrop of the historic Battle of Kohima in World War II. The song vividly captures the anguish and turmoil of those caught in the midst of conflict.
The clouds were raining metal, couldn't hear my own breath. My thoughts came short and brittle, mud with every step. Cried out to ringing ears, was blinded but not blinking. Swarming horde grew bigger as my heart continued sinking. Soldiers scream, soldiers scream, soldiers fight.
So friends, with that, we come to the end of this edition of Northeast Diary. Do join us next week to hear more stories from this enchanting part of India. Until then, goodbye.
A brush with searing darkness hit my whimpers with a shout. I fought for sheer exhaustion as I dread amongst the drowned.
This program was presented and produced by Vinita Thakur with assistance from Kumar Gaurav. It was brought to you by the New Services Division of Akashwani.